guys, and welcome to episode 104 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I had the privilege of interviewing Dr. Elizabeth McInvale. Some of you, or most of you, probably know her as Liz, especially from her Facebook Live chat she does, which have grown and grown in popularity, and rightly so. They're very good. There's lots of great information on them. And that's how I first came across her. But she started the Peace of Mind Foundation, which is a not-for-profit charity in the United States, dedicated to serving the OCD community. She's been the national spokesperson for the International OCD Foundation in the States since the age of 17. And she's assistant professor at Baylor University and has a PhD in social work. Liz herself has OCD, and we talk about her story in this episode. I ask her questions around her advice around ERP, exposure and response prevention therapy, the things she's learned in therapy, how her family supported her in her recovery, lifestyle changes. I ask her more about her Live with Liz show she does. We also talk about the Peace of Mind Foundation, the OCD Challenge online course she has, which is part of the foundation. We talk about technology and how that could help people with OCD in the future. We talk about stigma, the annoying saying of I'm so OCD. One thing I mentioned, I relate it to kind of the misunderstanding of wolves and that they're dangerous. And I say that in the United States, two people have died in the last 100 years. I was wrong. I fact checked that. It was actually four people and 10, including Canada. So still a very low number. But I wanted to correct myself there. But yeah, I think it was a good conversation. Liz gave lots of advice. I really admire the work she's doing and has done for so long. You know, there are many OCD advocates now in the world doing remarkable things. But credit to Liz for the amount of time she's been doing it. You know, she's really done it for quite a while now, and I respect the work she's done and her team at the Peace of Mind Foundation. And then she gives some nice, hopeful answers at the end of the usual questions I answer. So yeah, without further ado, here is Liz. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Elizabeth McInvale. Liz is the founder of the not-for-profit Peace of Mind Foundation, which is dedicated to serving the OCD community. She has a PhD in social work and is assistant professor at Baylor University. At the age of 18, she became the national spokesperson for the International OCD Foundation. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. You've been requested several times, so it's good to finally get you. So what I usually do is get people's OCD stories. So in as little or as much information as you want to give, it'd be good to hear that.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm willing to answer whatever I can. If I tell you my whole story, it'll probably take more time than you guys would like. So, you know, a brief overview is that I grew up here in Houston, Texas, in the US obviously, and was diagnosed with OCD around age 12. I showed symptoms here and there. So when I was younger, I would do things like reread a text or ask my mom questions about the weather repeatedly and ask some reassurance questions, but nothing out of the ordinary to where you would really worry, is something wrong and do we need to be concerned? And so for the most part, you know, we just kind of assumed it was just quirks, you know, a kid being a kid. And around age 12 and 13 is when things really changed. My OCD started interfering in many areas of my life, from, you know, contamination, scrupulosity, intrusive thoughts, worrying about harm coming to other people, feeling responsible. And almost, you know, pretty quickly, but I always say kind of almost overnight, we realized, or my parents quickly realized, I should say, that it went from, you know, is this a kid being a kid, to there's something wrong and we need to be concerned and we need to figure out how to address it. And so, you know, we started searching for treatment. I grew up here in Houston. It's the largest medical center in the world, one of the premier places to seek treatment for whatever illness you might be going through. And we just continued to hit dead end and dead end when it came to mental health and OCD treatment. We went to different providers. I was able to get a diagnosis pretty quickly, which was great, but we were told the same thing, right? They had never seen a case as severe as mine. There wasn't help available. And, you know, it was really pretty hopeless, pretty bleak. And so we just kind of started to figure out and try our best to just live life despite the illness. of course, without proper treatment, what we saw is that my OCD got worse and that kind of living life started to become less and less optional. And by the time I was 15, I was, you know, homebound, suicidal, and really struggling with OCD. And we found the Menninger Clinic, which at the time had a residential treatment program for OCD. And so at 15, I went to Menninger and stayed for about 90 days, got intensive residential care utilizing exposure with response prevention. And it changed my life forever. You know, I still have OCD. I still struggle on and off. I still struggled tremendously when I left, trying to kind of be a kid and understand what it's like to take ownership of having an illness and having to learn to manage it for the rest of your life. And so by that, I relapsed when I was 17. I went back to Menninger again and really had to learn what it's like to learn to manage my illness on a daily basis, right? Not just kind of here and there when it gets bad, but learning to manage it all the time so that you can prevent it from getting really bad again. And at age 17, I was asked to be the national spokesperson for the International OCD Foundation and took on that role and started doing campaigns and advocacy and really dedicated my life and my work to making a difference for those living with OCD.
No, awesome. Thank you for going into that. And, yeah, I've been seeing various of your stuff on YouTube from the various kind of media conversations you've had over the years. So yeah, it's good to see that being put out there. And you mentioned there about relapses. Are there any advice for those that may be currently in a relapse or, and also I guess advice for preventing that relapse? You said about learning to maintain it.
So I think the most important thing for those of us with OCD is to not look at things so black and white. I think sometimes we look at it as if we did a ritual, now we've relapsed and our OCD is back. Or, you know, sometimes we have a hard time understanding or remembering that ERP can be applied to any type of OCD. I think sometimes when we're in treatment, we have a certain type of OCD and we leave and it's managed and then a new type of OCD pops up. And a lot of times people think, well, I don't know how to deal with this. I'm not equipped to handle this. And the reality is that you absolutely are, right? ERP works for any type of OCD. It's just applying it to whatever kind you're dealing with. So I think the first thing is to kind of live in that gray area and not be so black and white as to like, I'm either managing and doing great or I've relapsed, right? You can have a struggle and have a bad day or have a setback and still get back on track. That doesn't mean you've totally relapsed. The second thing is really for me, it was about acceptance. You know, I think as a kid, when I was doing decently well, when I got treatment the first time and I was able to return to normal functioning for what I knew that to be, it was almost like I wanted to pretend like that OCD label wasn't a part of me anymore. You know, I wanted to just be normal. I wanted to be a kid and I didn't really want to accept or have to live with the fact that I would have this chronic mental health condition for the rest of my life. And that really was a problem for me because what would happen is I wasn't in active treatment. I wasn't actively managing my illness. And so I was slowly letting things come back. And that's kind of what contributed to a relapse for me. And so what happened is I had to learn and accept the fact that this is my life, right? Yes, I can experience joy. I can experience freedom. I can experience amazing things. But I do have a chronic mental health condition, and I will have that my whole life. Some days are going to be easier than others. Some days are going to be, you know, a bigger struggle than others. But it a lot for me when it came to relapse was about acceptance, because when I finally accepted that, I also learned what the trajectory for me would be, which is weekly therapy, staying on top of my ERP, always continuing to push against my OCD and not let it control my life. And I have to do that every day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a really good shift in thinking. On ERP then, what advice do you have for those, I guess, starting ERP? Because obviously it's a very tough treatment.
Yeah, you know, the thing I tell all my clients and I remind myself is that treatment's not easy, treatment's not fun, but it's well worth the risk, right? So it's one of those things that it's kind of like diet and exercise. It's not fun, we don't always enjoy it, but we often enjoy the results when they actually get there, they come. And so it's the same thing, you know, ERP is exhausting, it's debilitating, it's facing your fears you've been avoiding for a long time. But freedom, which is what you get rewarded with, outweighs all of those negative things that come with treatment. And so it's one of those things that you have to kind of keep your mind on the end game, right? Set those goals and remind yourself, what are you fighting for? What are you working for? And if you keep that in mind, then it makes treatment worth it.
Hmm. And were there any kind of, I say breakthroughs, probably not the best way. How has kind of, if it has, your mind shifted on how you look at it or at ERP or approach it from, say, when the first couple of years you were doing it to sort of the last sort of 5 years? Was there any change or?
You know, I think for me, it's about making it a part of my everyday life, right? Every day I do exposures. And for me, the reason I'm willing to do those exposures with ritual prevention is because I have things that keep me accountable, right? I have a job. I need to get up and I need to make it to my office for the day. I have meaningful relationships that I want to be able to continue to have and to be able to function appropriately in, where if my OCD is bad and when my OCD is out of control, it negatively impacts my ability to work, my ability to function socially, my ability to function in family relationships. It impacts all areas of my life. And so for me, the biggest breakthrough was accepting my illness, accepting that I have this, just like if someone has diabetes, right? If you have diabetes, you have to learn to manage that illness every day for the rest of your life. Some days are worse than others. Some days you cheat. Some days you eat in a way that you probably shouldn't. But the reality is that you work hard to get back on track. And so for me, my biggest breakthroughs were accepting my illness, implementing ERP every day of my life in different ways, right? Just if it's small ways, if it's large ways, but just always doing it, always pushing. And then also giving myself grace. I think a lot of times I get stuck in this battle of, but I still struggle with this, or but I still have these thoughts. And I've really tried to shift my thinking to, but look at the progress I've made, right? And look at where I've come instead of where I need to go.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of self-compassion. As opposed
right,
to,
exactly.
Yeah, instead of beating yourself up, it's appreciating yourself for what you've done so far.
100%.
Yeah. Okay. Is there any reminders you have to remind you of what you need to be doing daily? Or is it kind of when something comes up for you, you just deal with it then and there with regards to ERP?
You know, I tend to have triggers every day. I've struggled with OCD my whole life. It impacts most areas of my life in some way. And so I'm triggered every day. But what my biggest reminders are is where I've been versus where I'm at, right? I've been in a place where OCD controls every aspect of my life negatively. And I'm at a place where that's not the case anymore. And I don't want to get back to that. And so my reminders every day when I'm triggered is just do that quick exposure. It's not fun. It's not easy. But again, it's worth that freedom, which lies at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good way to look at it. And did you get, obviously as a kid, I'm sure you got your family involved, but I guess more so when you were sort of 16, 18 onwards, were your family very active in your treatment?
Yeah. You know, my family has always been very active, very supportive in everything I've done as far as treatment, advocacy, speaking out, right? They've always been very, very supportive and encouraging, which has been instrumental in my progress and in my outcome against my OCD. But I also was a kid who, you know, like most kids, I wanted my parents to be my parents. They've been very supportive and they've been absolutely incredible and they know my OCD more than anyone else. But I also, for me at least, as far as like actual treatment, I took ownership of that myself. It was important to me to do the work on my own, to know that I had their support, that I had their love. Yes, that's absolutely meaningful, but I needed to do the work and I needed to take ownership. I rarely asked my parents to be a part of my exposures to help me with my treatment. It just wasn't something I really was that comfortable with. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't do that now, and it doesn't mean that doesn't work for other people, but they've always been very supportive. They certainly were a big part of rituals for me, right? Reassurance seeking and things like that. Yeah. And so they had to be a part of treatment because they had to understand their boundaries too, of you can't give in and you can't do certain things.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. The point you just made there about, you know, it worked for you, it might not work for others. And I think that's something that gets overlooked. The treatment, yes, ERP is pretty standardized. But treatment generally is very unique to the individual and you have to find what works for you.
100%.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Sorry. There's a bit of bat lag, so occasionally I might cut you off by accident. Okay, so were there any lifestyle changes you made previously or currently that you think help with your kind of mental well-being generally?
You know, Yes and no. You know, I can you hear me? Okay. You know, that's a tough one. So I struggle with this because a lot of people want me to tell them that if you eat a certain way or you do certain things, it's going to help your OCD. And I don't believe that at all. I truly don't. I don't think the way I eat, the way I function, you know, changes my thoughts or changes my OCD in any way. But what I will say is that the healthier I am, and for me, being physically healthy, being mentally healthy, right, includes exercise, diet, healthy eating, I feel better. And if I feel better, I'm going to be more apt to fight my OCD. If I feel kind of lagged and I'm not exercising and I don't really feel good about myself, or I don't have the same the good or a good amount of energy, it's going to be a lot harder for me to fight my OCD. I have noticed an increase in my OCD this week, and I will say it's because, and I can contribute a lot of it to pinpoint it to directly, you know, what it is, which is that I got a new puppy, and so I'm up every 2 hours taking this dog out, and I have a hard time falling back asleep. And so my sleep schedule has been extremely disrupted, and I'm tired. And I notice that the more I'm tired, if I'm not in a good sleep routine, you know, in general, when you're tired, you're more irritable, you have less energy, right? All that happens. Well, that compound with OCD, right? It makes it a lot harder to fight the OCD. So I've noticed an increase in my OCD and my intrusive thoughts this week, and I can say that is probably directly contributed to the lack of sleep. So do I think lifestyle is important? Absolutely. I think it directly impacts our OCD. Do I think certain lifestyle decisions like food or exercise are going to get rid of or eliminate intrusive thoughts? Probably not. But can they contribute? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, sleep is so crucial generally. And I think, yeah, for me, lifestyle is about just keeping stress low. And if you can keep stress low, then that hopefully decreases, well, takes some of the power out of the OCD sometimes. Cool. So you've been, you know, I first came across you from your work on your Facebook page, which is Live with Liz. You do sort of live Facebook live, yeah, chats. And you seem to get a very big following from there. So it'd be good to see or hear why you started that and just the response you've had from people.
Yeah, so you know, I've been doing advocacy work for the last 13 years of my life, and one of the things that I kind of get time after time again is people want to talk directly to me, you know, and you see this, I'm sure, as well. But what happens is when you start to put a face to an illness, right? People feel like I'm the only one that can understand them and that can impact them, and I don't believe that at all, right? So I'm a big believer that I love treating patients. I love seeing clients. I think it's wonderful. It's meaningful. And a lot of clients will say, "I think you're the only one that can help me." And my response is always, "That's absolutely not true, right? I might be able to help you, but anyone who's educated and can treat OCD can help you." But so as part of that, with my foundation, we get a lot of people who want to talk directly with me, want to get my feedback, want me to kind of, you know, be able to converse with them or meet up with them, and I couldn't do it. I felt like I was letting a lot of people down. And so we were brainstorming as a foundation with, you know, well, how can we address this if people want to talk directly with me and we're having to tell them no? And so that's how the idea was born, was, hey, how about we start more Facebook stuff, especially now that they have Facebook Live. Maybe I should just do that a couple times a month so that people can directly talk to me. I can give feedback, but we're in a form where it's feasible, right? I can dedicate 2 hours a month. I can't dedicate 10 hours a day. And so that's really how the idea started. And I think it's been really helpful. People have enjoyed it. They've enjoyed being able to submit questions, be able to be anonymous or hear directly from me. And there are a lot of people that, you know, log in every session, and I know who they are at this point. And so it's been really great.
Yeah, that's clever. And I think, yeah, as you say, it gets to a point of critical mass and you have to do something that, because it's not, email's not sustainable.
No. And being able to, I'd love to be able to have phone calls with people all day and talk about OCD and give ideas and feedback. It just, unfortunately, it doesn't pay my bills, right? I don't get paid by my job to do that. And so I just don't have the time. And so that was something that, you know, hey, how can we still meet the needs?
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, good. And it'd be good to find out more about the Peace of Mind Foundation, the work you guys do, and I guess the mission behind it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the Peace of Mind Foundation was developed by myself and my family back in 2005. And really, our mission is to provide advocacy, research, and support to individuals with OCD. We developed the OCD Challenge website, which is a free interactive self-help website for OCD. And then really our focus, if you visit peaceofmind.com, is to offer information and videos that are specific to OCD, OCD subtypes, and OCD treatment. Our thought has always been, we never want to replicate what foundations already do. We never want to redo work that's already being done, right? That's not needed. But what can we do, and where is there a need or a gap for individuals with OCD? And we found that to be in education. And so we do a lot of education through online mediums and then also through resources. So we tend to be a hub where people can contact us and we will help vet therapists in their area and tell them, you know, this is who is probably a better fit for you. This is if your insurance is going to cover or not. Here are some options for you if you're struggling financially. Here are some different resources in your area. And that's really what we end up doing a lot of our days.
Yeah. Now, that's really good to hear, because, I mean, I get emails. A lot of my listeners are in the States, and they ask me, do I know any therapists in, say, Atlanta? Obviously, I do Charlotte nicely, but, you know, other than that, I get lost sometimes, so I don't know where to point them. Obviously, the ISDF, so I'll keep that in mind for future.
Please do, yeah. And we also will post tips, and IOCDF has them as well on their website about just some quick questions that you can ask providers. You know, a lot of times people just don't know, what do I ask? What am I looking for? And so just to kind of have a few quick questions to ask so that you can know pretty quickly, are they capable and competent of treating me?
Yeah. 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 Okay, yeah. Great. Sorry, my tap's dripping there. I noticed from your Baylor University page, you're quite interested in technology, in the case of how it can help OCD, or the recovery, that is. And obviously, you mentioned there the OCD Challenge website, which looks great. And I guess, how else do you see technology helping people with OCD in the future?
You know, in so many ways. So the first and most important way is technology is a medium where it allows people who otherwise have no access to care to get care for the first time. You know, there's people in third world countries and areas, even in the U.S., but certainly outside of the U.S. and in remote areas where there's no treatment at all. There's no providers. There's nobody knowledgeable in their area. And technology for the first time gives them access to that knowledge that they deserve. So I certainly see, hopefully, and I hope and pray that we'll see an increase in access to care and a really accessibility of appropriate treatment for OCD through technology as a medium. And then, of course, you know, technology can start, not to say replace treatment, but to me, the way I look at these interventions is they become an opportunity for us to keep ourselves engaged in treatment post one-on-one treatment. So what I mean by that is that, you know, in the past, maybe we use self-help workbooks or whatever it is. Can a app or could a website be something that you can do when you're no longer in active treatment, but that can keep you accountable doing your exposures and your ritual and preventing your rituals every day, right? So I think it can increase accessibility, and then I think it can increase accountability for those of us that are doing treatment.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think the accountability is a big one as well, especially for younger children who may not. For me as a kid, I hated homework. So if anyone ever suggested it, I wasn't going to do it. So having a funner way of me or whoever doing that, I think is a big one. And obviously the next question is around stigma. So you've done a lot over the years, as I mentioned earlier, good media shows, breaking down stigma, showing the realities of what it's like to live with OCD. And it seems to be getting more and more hotter, the issue, especially around this phrase of I'm so OCD. I guess, so what's the biggest challenge to breaking down that stigma, do you see, in the minute?
You know, the biggest challenge, I think, is that, so there's this beautiful plus side to the fact that most people know what OCD stands for nowadays. You know, 10, 15 years ago, no one knew what that acronym stood for. So there's a plus in the fact that most people could say, oh, that stands for obsessive compulsive disorder. The downside is that with this increased knowledge, half of it's not true, right? And so half of the time now we're having to re-educate them on what OCD is and break a bad habit of improper education where before they just didn't know at all. And I think the downside is that most people are assuming OCD is something it's not, right? When you look at these behaviors that most people identify as OCD, it tends to be things like someone being very organized, someone being clean, somebody wanting things in an orderly fashion, someone being very rigid, getting upset if rules or norms aren't followed. And the reality is really none of that is OCD. Could be OCD if it's an unwanted intrusive thought followed by a repetitive ritual that they get no pleasure from. But most of the time, I think what people are identifying or labeling as OCD is truly OCPD, obsessive compulsive personality disorder, where individuals have rules, norms, rituals that they do, but they actually get some pleasure or joy in the ritual, and they talk about it being an innate part of their personality, something that kind of helps them function and that they enjoy. People with OCD have a totally different experience, right? We don't enjoy the rituals. We would do anything to get rid of the intrusive thought. And so, you know, now we have to break down the stigma. We have to break down these improper education that's happening. And the only way to do that is through education. And you're right. People say all the time, I'm so OCD. There's nothing that bothers me more than that. We sell and have t-shirts that we give out that say OCD is not an adjective, right? Because it's not. And people need to understand it is a debilitating chronic mental illness. And I think society has put this label on OCD that it's someone who's just neat or organized. And unfortunately, celebrities are a lot to blame for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And I've mentioned on the podcast a few times, I kind of link OCD situations similar to that of the wolf. So, you know, wolves have been hunted and killed for a long time because they're quote unquote evil and they're dangerous, and that's not the case. They've killed like two people in the States in the last 100 years, which is nothing. Obviously, you know, sad for those two people. You know, bears kill way more, but we look at bears because they've got, you know, they've been associated with a cute cuddly teddy bear over the years, or in films they're usually quite comical or they're friendly, and the wolf is always seen as this real evil character. And that's really not the truth. There's a sanctuary near me in London that has wolves here in the UK, and they invest a lot of time to try and rewrite the wolf's image. And it's kind of like the problem I see is the whole time Hollywood keeps producing these films where the wolf's the bad guy, it's going to keep going. So part of me is it's the education, but it's almost like getting into the script writers who are writing these TV pieces and the films and trying to change that.
Right. I agree.
I just don't know how to do that. So yeah, any script writers listening.
Time and education.
yeah, exactly. You just keep going. Okay, good. So I got some questions now, more general questions that you'd get at sort of the end of a job interview. You're in an elevator with someone with OCD. They've just told you that. You've got sort of 30 seconds with them. What do you say?
I know how difficult the struggle must be. I would do anything in the world to take away your pain, and I wish that I could, but I can't. But what I can tell you is that appropriate treatment can. There is help available. Never lose hope and make sure that you get with an OCD specialist who does exposure with response prevention. When you're with the right person, you'll realize that help is available for you and that you can live a normal, high-functioning life despite this diagnosis. Allow this challenge in your life to be a source of strength instead of something that's a negative.
Nice. You've done that a few times, haven't you?
I don't know. I have or not, but I certainly feel like I can.
Yeah. No, I really like that. It's a great answer. I'm sure that would give comfort and hope to anyone. You said that too. So you've got a billboard in Houston. Doesn't necessarily have to be OCD related, but can. What do you want written on that billboard for all to see?
I've actually had a couple of these, and I would have the same thing written on it that we've had in the past. So it was a campaign that we first did back in 2004 for OCD, and it said, "What does OCD look like?" And it had my picture, and it said, "Me, my name's Elizabeth." And I think those few simple words start to break apart and tear apart stigma, because there is a face to a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be my face. It doesn't have to be my picture. It can be anybody. But I would love to see more people speak out and speak openly about their mental health conditions, because that's the only way we're going to tear down stigma.
Yeah, really good point. I mean, I've had someone say to me before, it's something like, "Oh, you can't have a mental illness. You look normal." And I was like, yep. Jesus. But yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, as soon as you put the face to it, it breaks down stigma, and people see that, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so I've asked this question a few times and I'm starting to change it, but I'm still going to stick with the original wording. Is what advice do you have for those who want to live an amazing life? So I guess this is just really a life advice question for living a good life.
Use your struggle as a sense of strength. My favorite quote that I always lean on is that without my struggle, I wouldn't know my strength. And I couldn't believe it more than anything. I've had a lot of challenges in my life and I've had a lot of adversity, but what I will say is through it all, I can look back and say it's all made me stronger. Doesn't mean I don't want to give up my OCD. It doesn't mean I don't wish I wouldn't have OCD. Of course I don't. But at the same time, I've learned to turn my pain into a meaningful purpose. And so for anybody living with any diagnosis and any illness, OCD, mental illness, medical illness, it doesn't matter. What I've learned time and time again is that when we turn our pain into purpose, it gives meaning to something that was once meaningless. And when we have meaning to a struggle, it makes it worth fighting for. It makes it feel purposeful. And it makes us realize why we're having to go through what we've had to go through. Because at the end of the day, it's worth it when you think your story or your journey may have helped one person.
Mm. Yeah, very true. I love that. Okay, is there anything else I've missed that you'd like to talk about or share?
Not that I can think of. Cool. Covered a lot.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it, and you've given some great information and wisdom and hope. I know it's going to help a lot of people.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for what you do. You know, giving a voice to the voiceless is the best thing we can do in this world. So I certainly appreciate it, and I know it's making a difference for so many.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Liz. Disclaimer time, this podcast is not therapy, nor should it be a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Disclaimer over. And if you're interested in the OCD camp or in the UK and over 18, please head over to theocdcamp.com to find out more. And all information about Liz and everything else will be at theocdstories.com/ /, I'm not sure which one, podcast. Speak soon.